Good day, everyone, and welcome to this ABC Boston Legal Season 3 press conference. Today's call is being recorded. To listen to the replay after today's call, please dial 1-888-203-1112. Again, that's 1-888-203-1112, and enter passcode 334-7452. That's 334-7452. The replay will be available at 3 p.m. Central Time. After opening
what was
remarks,
that? 888?
After opening remarks and introductions, we will be conducting a question and answer session. During that time, if you would like to ask a question, please firmly press the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Stacey Lutz, Vice President, Media Relations and Publicity, David E. Kelly Productions. Ms. Lutz, please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of ABC and 20th Century Fox Television, along with those of us, David E. Kelly, thank you for participating in the Boston Legal Conference call with series creator, writer, and executive producer David E. Kelly, and with back-to-back Emmy Award winner James Spader, who, of course, plays Alan Shore. Operator, we're ready to start.
Thank you, ma'am. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please firmly press the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. We will come to you in the order that you signal, and if you find that your question has been asked and answered before you could ask it, and you would like to remove yourself from the question roster, please firmly press the pound key. Also, if you're on a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute button is disengaged so that your signal can reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And for our first question, we go to Barry Guerin with Hollywood Reporter.
Hi, guys. Hope you're doing well. This question is a little off the beaten track. I'm kind of curious how Denny Crane and Alan Shore got their name. Is there anything, is there a bit of a story behind that? Hello?
David?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we do apologize. However, we have lost Mr. Kelly. We will get him back online in just a moment. Please stand by.
In the meantime, Barry, I'd like to also add to that if you want to ask him about Jeffrey Coho's name. Jeffrey Coho is the newest character to Boston Legal, played by Craig Bierko. His character will be introduced next week, actually.
I'll be happy to include that and any other characters you want to...
that one in particular is very interesting. Once we get him back, I'm sure he'll explain that.
Okay.
James, are you on?
We are still trying to reach Mr. Kelly.
James, are you still on?
Yes.
Okay. James, do you know how Alan Shore got his name?
I don't have a clue.
Does anyone have a question for James in the meantime while we get David back on board? Operator?
Yes, ma'am.
Are we able to do that while we're getting David back on?
Yes, ma'am, and we should have him in just a moment.
Okay.
And Mr. Kelly is back.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Mr. Guerin, please go ahead with your question.
David, did you push that mute button?
Not today.
I promise I didn't.
Do you want me to repeat that question for you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize, but it cut off as soon as you said it was off the beaten path, so went the call. Are you fishing?
I guess that was a bad choice of words. I was very curious how Denny Crane and Alan Shore and perhaps also Jeffrey Coho got their name. What's the story behind how you found their names and how important were their names?
You know, I don't really remember Alan Shore, because that was so long ago. Sometimes I try to match names with faces. If I had to take a wild guess, when I'm stuck for names, I draw on my little hockey library, and there was a famous hockey player by the name of Eddie Shore who played for the Bruins, and if memory serves me, I plucked that name out of that. Crane... I don't know. That character just sounded like he should have kind of an aggressive name, and Crane seemed to fit. And Coho, believe it or not, is named after one of my favorite fishes.
Okay. And
which is a form of salmon.
The Jeffrey part of it?
No, a coho is a form of salmon.
Right, right. I was just, yeah.
And then when I, for the first name, it's often this sort of phonetical rhythm. I don't know, Jeffrey Coho, it just, it's a very inexact science, and I don't know if I would call it a science, but so be it.
Okay, thank you.
And we go next to Rick Porter with Zaptuit.com.
Hi, this, I guess, is primarily for David. In the first couple of episodes, you seem to break the fourth wall a few times with James's comment at the end of the first episode that he feels like a series regular on a TV series, and Denny's cue music bit at the start of the second episode. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, certainly when Denny said cue the music, that definitely was a break in the wall. As for Shore's talking about a series being a character in a television show, you could consider that a break in the wall, but it's also kind of not, because I think that's something that Shore might say and feel, because the perception of television characters are that they have to be redeeming, and Shore had felt that he had fallen into this maybe burden, that he had to be a bit redeeming, and I wouldn't go so far as a role model, but he felt a little constrained maybe in his role in the firm and the obligation to be something other than degenerate, and he was commenting on it.
And can that maybe signal a little bit that maybe he will start being a bastard again? Or?
Yeah, I think he is intermittently a bastard, but it may signal a willingness on us to embrace that part of his character. As far as Crane's breaking of the wall, I think historically we've always had a little bit of a wink in the show. I think our viewers are able to wink with us. I think on previous occasions last year, Crane had said headlines like, I've won an Emmy, or and there are other episodes, I think, of the balcony scene where Shore and Crane have referenced that they've hardly seen one another during this episode. It's a license that we'll take from time to time. I don't think we certainly want to be careful not to throw the audience out of a storyline, but we're not above winking with them at the same time.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please firmly press the star key, followed by the digit 1. We go next to Eric Deegans with the St. Petersburg Times.
Hi, this question is for David as well. It seems as if the landscape of TV drama has changed quite a bit from the times when we saw shows like The Practice and Ally McBeal at their height. Does it feel any different writing Boston Legal at a time when we've got all these sort of incremental serialized shows on, and that seems to be the flavor of the month these days?
It doesn't really. I mean, I would completely agree with you. I feel that shift in landscape when I turn on the television and watch television, but I don't necessarily feel it when I'm sitting down to write shows. We kind of put the walls up and tunnel into our respective franchise and try to, write to the truth of that particular show. I've never been one to try and put a marketing hat on and say, okay, this is what is selling, therefore, let's produce this. I don't profess to be very good at it, and I would probably fail. So I guess the short answer is, yeah, I agree the landscape is different. It seems to be more diverse, which I think is a good thing. But as far as it impacting me as a writer and producer of my shows, I tend not to focus on that.
And I was wondering, I mean, I'm so used to TV seasons when you've had, three, four shows on at once. Is there a reason why we haven't seen you associated with a greater number of shows more recently?
I'm probably getting older and a little more tired. I had a great time doing two shows
when it was Allie in the practice, and they were very opposite, and I could escape from one world to the other. Three shows was a bit of a burden, and I think I ideally would wanted to get back to one show or two shows at the most, because what I was missing when I was doing that many shows, quite frankly, is the communal part of television, which is what I've loved best, and that's getting to not be a complete foreigner on your sets and meet with people when you're busy trying to get three scripts out in a 12-day period. You tend to be very isolated and in the room, and the only people you see over the course of the year are your writers, and not even enough of them because you're writing yourself so much. So I think it was a decision on mine to scale back a little bit, focus more on a small number of shows. I'm not beyond trying to do two shows again, because I quite like the diversity of being able to write for two different animals. But I don't think we'll ever see a time that I will be hands-on writing any more than two.
Great. Thanks a lot, David.
Sure.
And as a final reminder, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. And again, if you are on a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute button is disengaged so that your signal can reach our equipment. Again, that is star one to ask a question. We go next to Lynette Rice with Entertainment Weekly.
Hey, David, this is probably an extension of what you just said. I actually have two questions. Since the show is established, this does feel like the perfect time to see what you've got up your sleeve next. Do you have anything in development, or do you have an idea that you can talk about that's next? And also, I'm curious, of all the new fall shows, particularly the dramas, are there any that interest you and that you're curious to check out?
On my slate first, I'm working on a show called, it's an adaptation of a BBC show called Life on Mars. And the plan for that is probably to be on next fall's schedule. In terms of this fall's schedule, I'm just now sampling shows along with everybody else. I think the landscape looks pretty good. I think that there's probably more diversity on the air than in years past, which seemed to be sort of inundated with procedural shows. I saw Studio 60 on Monday night and loved it. I think that is great, great work, and I think it's a tremendous occasion for television to have both Aaron Sorkin and Tommy Schlamme being back part of our medium, because they've been great contributors to it in the past and obviously are going to be again. As far as other new shows, I guess this is the week we start to sample them all.
Cool. Thank you.
Sure.
And we go next to Rita Shero with the Tulsa World.
Hi. I just wanted to ask James a question. How are we going to see Alan Shore this season? What are you expecting out of him, or what should viewers expect out of him this season?
I'm not entirely sure. That's one of the fun things that I've found with this, with working in television, that was not the case when I was doing films, is that it changes from week to week, and I think that probably if I could say anything, it would be even more variety than last year. I think that last year the show was sort of refinding itself again over the course of the season, and Alan was being blown with the winds of the show, and I think that as he is, I think that he has to wear a certain amount of hats on the show, but I think that if I could wish for anything, it would be that there is an inconsistency, that it is as surprising as it can possibly be, and that just when you think you know where it's going to go, it goes somewhere else entirely. I think that probably that there has been a desire for more confrontation and more trouble, I think that he has alluded, or David has alluded, with episodes and Alan's musings and episodes, that he is uncomfortable with the comfort that he has been feeling at the firm, that he's restless, and that he is going to be up to no good, probably. That's what I hope for, because I think that's what creates turmoil.
And is he going to stay lonely?
I don't know. I think that may be a state of being. I've never known him not to be partly that. I don't know. I mean, I'm still getting to know who he is too. You know, I don't. You know, it's sort of a strange experience to be doing somebody for 3 years, playing somebody, and I don't know a lot about him. I know a certain amount, but that's a quality I've always sort of found about him. I mean, I think he's got a tremendous appetite for life, and at the same time, he takes life with a healthy dose of humor, but at the same time, you know, he's there's certainly a melancholy side to him that is very alive and vital, you know, and I think it and at times he revels in that sort of, and I think loneliness is I think that sort of goes hand they go hand in hand maybe a bit. I think it drives him a bit. I think it. I think maybe that drives him a little bit. It pushes him towards the eccentrics that he loves so dearly.
And the eccentrics that you like to play?
Yeah, I think he certainly is, and I guess I've certainly played my share in my time. But I know he certainly is, and he certainly has a great fondness for that. You know, it's so funny as I can hear David's heart beating on the other end of the phone there, and it's funny, you know, all of this, I as I've gotten to know David better and better, and I've gotten to know the show, it really, all of this, as I hear myself speaking, especially when I'm speaking in front of David about this character and the show in general, it's amazing how much I realize that so much of this is an extension of David. You know, David has a great love and fondness for eccentrics and curious people and oddities and things, and I happen to as well, but I think he loves that, and that's the world that he creates to a great degree. A lot of the characters on the show have that, and Denny certainly is an extremely eccentric character. And Alan is as well, and Alan's greatest times, I think, are spent with Jerry Esmond. I mean, they go on and on. I mean, Catherine Piper. And I mean, if someone's got a... Someone's it never really gets weird enough for him, I don't think.
Does it ever get too weird for you?
No, never.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions on our roster. Therefore, Ms. Lux, I'll turn the conference back over to you for any closing remarks.
Thank you. Just one last thing, David. If you could talk for a moment about the balcony scene, which has come to resonate with audiences, I think, beyond anyone's wildest imagination. Can you talk about how that scene came to be and about the chemistry between the two actors, Shatner and Spader?
Yeah, the balcony scene was not something that was designed conceptually to be a staple or an end of every show. That just kind of happened. And when you, that's what chemistry with characters usually is. It kind of happens. A writer can't orchestrate it. It's the actors bringing characters to life that somehow realize it. And we really tumbled to the idea pretty early in the series that one of the biggest, if not the biggest, components of the series is that relationship of Crane and Shore. And the balcony scene was a perfect example to allow them to be intimate, for them to ruminate, to wonder, to ponder, share their fears and laughter about life. And it also served as a vehicle for us as writers to reflect on the episode and maybe some of the more far-reaching questions or emotions that the episodes touch on.
And one last thing, moving into season 3, we're introducing a new character in Jeffrey Coho, played by Craig Bierko. Can Can you talk for a minute about the impetus for that and what Jeffrey Coho, what your intentions are for that character?
Well, we introduced Jeffrey Coho in a pretty conventional way, and we introduced him as we introduce a longer story arc in the form of this murder trial. As we go along, unlike what we've done in the past with other characters, we will peel layers back of this character to render him an animal with his own eccentricities and flaws as well. So I think we seduced the audience with the idea that this may be at long last a straight ahead lawyer without demons and foibles, and we will burst that bubble probably by show 4 or 5 and reveal him to be just another nut in the cauldron.
Great. Rufus, do we have any other questions?
And we have no further questions on our roster at this time.
Okay. Then at that point, I would like to thank everyone for participating in the call this morning and let you know that if you have any additional questions, please feel free to contact me at 310-727-2202 or Marcia Smith at ABC at 818-460-6605. As a reminder, of course, Boston Legal airs Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. on ABC. Thank you and have a great day.
And ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's ABC Boston Legal Season 3 press conference. We do appreciate your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.